Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
British John Gallia is a classically trained pianist who has been writing songs since the age of 13. His songs tap into own truths with unflinching openness, such as the passing of his mother and overcoming cancer in his teens. He also aims to provide a positive role model for the bisexual community with a notable performance at last year's Bi Pride UK in London, plus several more key Pride events across the country. Other big live moments for John have included shows as guest to McFly and Lamar. Having also worked with the likes of Beluga Heights and Frank Music, John writes for other artists, which has led to a string of international hits from Germany to Malta. His own story has been further explored with coverage from the likes of American songwriter, Attitude, Gay Times, House of Solo, and Wonderland. John is an award-winning singer-songwriter who is making waves in the industry as an independent artist with an iTunes singer-songwriter number one hit to his credit, as well as over a million followers on social media. John's latest EP, called The Art of Collaboration, sees him collaborate with the likes of Nate James, Ironic, Scorcher, Maya Miko, TJ Dreams, Hannah Long, The Monarch, and Oscar Labruto. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got John Gallia. Where do we find you in the world and how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm in the UK, just at home. And yeah, I'm doing great. It's Monday, it's a lovely day. And feeling great. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. Thank you for asking. What is your weather like over there?
It's really lovely. It's sunny today. It must be like 20 degrees, which is quite good, to be fair, for the UK.
I just giggled
like
because
it's finally here.
When you said sunny today, it was like emphasis on the sunny.
Yeah, we just don't get it usually, so quite like enjoy it while you can.
So we're moving and are in our winter, and our average temperatures are like sort of 15 to 20 degrees.
Oh, it's a bliss, to be fair.
Okay, let's rewind. At what age did you think, cool, you want to be in the music or entertainment world, creative world, and how did that journey progress to where we are currently?
Well, musically, I guess it all started when my dad brought home an electric organ he found randomly. I couldn't play an instrument, but I loved the idea of singing and being able to perform. And so I taught myself how to play a little bit. And then I ended up getting lessons, did all the classical training that you do. And then from there, I really was interested in how you write a pop song and why certain pop songs stick in your head more than others. So I started learning from the greats and started songwriting myself wherever I could and performing wherever I could too, gigging and moved to London. And yeah, nothing's ever stopped me from looking back really. But those classical days have really helped when it comes to writing and being creative for sure. So it wasn't a waste of time at all. And it is fun. I still play a lot of classical music too.
You moved to London from?
From Norfolk. So I'm originally from a coastal town called Great Yarmouth. And it's very different to the city, especially growing up. But I felt like I needed to get out a little bit to explore my music. And it's very difficult, even now, I suppose, for people to start a music career or go into performing. If you are from Norfolk or from East Anglia, you tend to migrate to London or the bigger cities.
Yeah.
But I do love going back, to be fair, and it's got a very special place in my heart.
You mentioned the study of creating a great pop song and the fact that some stick and others don't. So is there any behind-the-scenes information you can give us about why that is and when it happens or not?
I'm still trying to work it out. I'm sure many others are too. But no, I think generally, like a good, what makes a great pop song? Earworms, you know, those hooks, those riffs that get in your head. I'm a lover of melody. And so if a good pop song has a brilliant melody, I'm all for it. And you combine that with a really heartfelt lyric or a really cool lyric and it just gels. I don't think there is a scientific formula for
Yeah,
it. If there was,
absolutely.
there'd be some very rich people in the world. But
Yeah.
no, it's the process of trying. And for me, songwriting is like therapy, to be honest with you. You know, I get all my feelings out, and most of my songs come from a place of personal experience or relationship. So yeah, they're like little babies, I guess. So it's more therapeutic for sure.
Yeah. Okay, you already mentioned that songwriting is like therapy for you and that it's releasing your emotions and so on and so forth. So, beyond that, from 0 to 3 to 4 minutes in creating a song, what motivates it? What invigorates it? Is it easy every time? Do you always write by yourself or do you collaborate with others? Let's unpack your creative process.
This is a thing, it differs all the time. So one time I could be just me on a piano playing a song, writing a song just from, you know, a Sunday afternoon vibe, or it could be I'm writing a song for my new EP, or you're right, I collaborate with other songwriters and artists, which I love to do. So studio sessions are very different. So there can be three plus people in the studio. To be honest, I'm not a great fan of having loads of people. I think, you know, cooking in the melting pot, I think things get a bit, for me, it just doesn't work. But I know for other writers and other songwriters, it works brilliantly. But there's it depends on what the aim is, what you're trying to achieve, and what situation. But for me, they all kind of start with the piano. So it's all like melody based, riff based. Sometimes, like one of my songs called Trendsetter, it came from the idea of the word trendsetter. And I was like, I would
Yes.
like to write a little thing. So that it differs all the time, but there's no set formula again to a writing. It's very different each time, which is great, makes it unique.
Yeah, and if you try and stick to a formula each time and do, oh, what I need to do is the same as last time, the fans, yeah, they'll pick it up. It's not
They get quite bored,
reinventing.
I think maybe.
Yeah.
They want to see something different. I want to feel something. Go on a journey, I guess. Which
Yeah.
is what you're doing when you're songwriting, I guess. So
Well, isn't that life as well?
that's true. Very deep, very deep.
As you've mentioned, songwriting's like therapy, which means that you're going into a vulnerable space. And you also said that you prefer less writing partners than more because that works better for you. But when you're going into a space with an artist or a writer that you have not yet worked with, does it take you a moment to get used to the energy, get used to the space? Or do you just dive straight in and see what happens?
Well, often if I'm going to the studio, like I've just with this new EP, they're full of collaborations, and the only thing I could take from there is I kind of knew who I was going into the studio with a little bit. So I knew a little bit of their backstory, which was cool, and how they became artists and what inspired them and stuff. So that's always very helpful. And again, when you're in the studio, you pick up on their vibe very quickly and their amazing talents. You know, some people can be very different live to studio as well. So that's interesting to find that out. Again, it depends on what artist you're working with, to be fair. But I love the creative process of that. And don't get me wrong, I do love like working with artists and studio session singers and musicians who you don't know what they're going to be like, because they come in and maybe they'll do some BVs or something and they sound incredible. And you're like, oh my God, I need to do more of that. Or, guitarists who are amazing licks, and you're like, you can stay all day. So that's always good. But the art, literally the art of collaboration, I love it. It's the different vibes, the different people. It's brilliant.
And what do you enjoy about performing live?
Performing live is a different thing. It's a different ball game. It's there's a lot of it I love and a lot of I don't like too. There's a lot of pressure for me when I'm performing. I always feel like I need to give extra energy. But the feedback from your fans and the people in the audience when they're singing back your lyric that you've written maybe in your home studio in your bedroom, it's crazy, and it blows my mind every time I step on stage for that. That they can relate to what you're writing, that's so personal. That's a huge thing that I love about performing live. Also, traveling the country, I love to travel, so different venues, which is fantastic seeing that. And I don't know whether I prefer being in the studio or performing live, because when I'm in the studio, I'm like, oh, I love it. It's a
Yeah.
creative process. But when you get on the road and do different shows, it's like, oh, wow, there's something beats that buzz when you're performing. It's something very special.
You referenced there a bunch of things that you don't enjoy about performing live. So that buzz that you spoke of, do you focus on that in order to get over those perceived negative or the things you don't enjoy? Or how do you get over those aspects that are not enjoyable for you?
Well, for example, stage fright, I get a little bit of that. So to start with, stepping on stage is an issue. And then I get on and it's blown away by people's reactions that when you're performing, the buzz, the adrenaline. So I guess that kind of overrides that negative feeling for sure. And then the next show comes around and you're like, oh, it's like a roller coaster.
Yeah, yeah.
No, yeah, it's fun. There's nothing quite like performing live.
So I'm that guy that's normally standing up right in front, dancing, jamming, doing my thing. I'll take my phone out and take a couple of videos, a couple of photos, and I'll put it away. I notice that the people around me, they oftentimes 70%, 80%, 90% of the time videoing, posting, tweeting, photoing. From your perspective, being on the stage and seeing a bunch of phones, do you feel that takes away from the energy of the interaction with the audience and from them being in the moment? Or it's just where society is at this stage?
It's interesting you say that, because I went to a concert by an amazing artist called Garth Brooks recently, and my phone was taken away from me. And so I've been on that side too. And part of me felt like it was quite freeing, because you've got to be in that space without having to worry about, oh, is that the right angle? Is the right thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you're forever living with those memories in that space. And I totally get that. But another part of me is like, oh, wouldn't it be great to just like relive that moment again? So I can see that too. It is part of what it is nowadays. That's the world. They want, you know, they're on the phone. I mean, I'm constantly posting on socials and stuff. So it is, you either embrace it or you don't embrace it. And to be honest, it's quite nice when you do take a step back and you have those moments where you can just enjoy the music, enjoy the live moments.
Yeah.
With it all. So I'm a bit of both, to be honest with you. I think there's negatives and positives of both aspects.
So I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. I love the aesthetic of holding something, the journey of the choice, the journey of the unpacking, the booklet, the listening from song 1 to 10 or 15. I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, even cassettes and vinyls, are making a massive comeback. Vinyls alone last year in the UK, 5.9 million copies sold, the biggest since 1990, and cassettes and CDs are also on an upward trajectory. But we've also got these streaming platforms whereby people consume music on. What is your observation and perception of the landscape at the moment?
Well, I'm just like you. I'm a huge CD collector. I've got loads of them. I've got vinyls as well. The physical product is part of, for me, is part of the music. It's what the artist is trying to get a message to you. So with an inlay card or with the lyrics, and you read them, and it's the whole package. And it is missing from streaming. Okay, you get the music videos now that are little canvas on certain streaming platforms, but it is missing. You are right. For me, that's a big thing. And that's why I would love to still put, you know, vinyls and CDs out there for people to buy. And I also, there's, you know, there's issues royalty wise with streaming, and sure, without going into that, that still is unresolved. It's still a major issue for independent artists like myself. I mean, yeah, I'd love to have been releasing music in the '80s right now. But it is what it is. You embrace it again, but I'm all about embracing what's now, and hopefully trying to improve on it.
So I had an interesting experience last year. I was living overseas and came back, and I wanted to buy a CD player to listen to all my CDs on. And everyone said to me, there's no way you're going to be able to find a CD player anywhere. So I went on to Takealot, for the overseas listeners. This is similar to Amazon, but slightly different. I went on to the Takealot platform, and there were hundreds of options, and I had to narrow it down and narrow it down. And eventually I got my CD player, which I was very excited about. Another interesting point that I noted is that listening to CDs on a CD player, the sound quality is so amazing. It's like listening to music in a stadium full of sound, surround sound. It's fantastic.
It's true. It's true. It opens up the song, it opens up everything. And even vinyl, again, it changes it again.
Yes.
I'm always amazed when the new songs on the vinyl came up. Like, oh my God, how cool is this? And the crackle. But yeah, it does completely change it. It does change it. And who knows what's going to happen with streaming, or what the next platform's coming, or We just have to be open to what's coming up. Who
Yeah.
knows, eh? Who knows?
What is next? What's happening short term and long term?
So I've just released my sixth EP called The Art of Collaboration, and it's got three new songs and three remastered songs. And the idea of it's like to bring all my collaborations from my career together in one place for so far. So with Scorcher, Ironic, the rappers, soul singer called Nate James, and so there's a lot of cool tracks on there, and so that's been released. I had a music video as well for Old School Love, and my first ever animated music video, which is, I think they did quite well with us. That wasn't too bad. So that's come out. And then future-wise, hopefully going to announce some shows later on in the year, and plan them and try to get over my stage fright from doing that. Because there is nothing like playing live. It's got a great feeling. And in between, constantly writing for myself and some other artists. So forever busy, as well as, yes, musically, as well as doing everything else on socials and traveling and doing the rest of it. It's a busy old ride.
Yeah. So you said that you write songs for yourself and for other artists. So when you're going into the studio to write a song, do you know that it's going to be a song for yourself or for another artist? And if you do know, do you approach the writing of a song for another artist differently compared to when you're writing for a song for yourself?
Again, it depends. So yeah, some songs I'll know that not for me. It's got a female vocal on it. I've got an artist in mind who'd be great, and then you approach them and they're like, no. And then, okay, we'll go to someone else and they do a better job. So it's like, okay, so you never really know the journey of that song's going to go or what people can bring to it with their skills, and that I love that too. But then again, studio session work, you're very much you're writing a song for the next person's EP or their new single, so you have to be quite focused on what they're trying to say and want to get out. Try to make it authentic as possible. So again, it differs. It very much differs. But I do like the journey of the song because it's like a child, eh? As they grow up, everyone's got their little journey of where it
Yes.
goes, and it's nice to see where they end up.
You said that your latest release is your sixth EP. Have all your releases been EPs?
So I've never released a full album yet. It's ready, I think, he says. It's like an artist forever painting on that canvas. But the idea was to always put like little snippets of where I am at the moment in an EP form. And it was easier that he's an independent artist as well, just to put them out quicker than a full album launch. But I think it's time to put a full album out. I think I'm ready. And I think it's, for me, one of the most personal music I've ever made, and hopefully the best, but the fans will be the judge of that. But it's certainly probably the most exciting pieces of work I've written so far. So hopefully maybe 2025 I get the first single video out, because it is difficult as an independent artist getting everything sorted, and the
Yeah.
PRs and the pluggers and the radios. It's not easy. It's fun in a way, but it's hard. But to release a full album, I just want to make sure everything's spot on.
An EP is an extended play, and an album is an LP or long play. So now, when you're releasing an EP compared to full album, you mentioned there are a number of differences. What are those differences for the fans who do not understand?
Well, for me, I mean, again, it depends on the artist. It depends on people's what they think of an EP and album is. But for me, as someone who's loved CDs and the vinyl, an album is for me a piece of artwork. It's really a way of artists telling you who they are, what they're about, and especially a debut one. That's very important. So it really lays those plans. For me, the EPs were snapshots of songs. And like postcards or like the scrapbook pages that gives you an impression of where the journey was going leading up to here I am. So I think for me, the album is incredibly important, and it's not just more songs. It's from what I've been writing and the way I've done it, it's a whole journey of me as a person and what I think and how I feel and the people I've seen so far, for the negative and for the
Yeah.
positive too.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 8 years, I know your answer will be different every time because there are millions of them. I recognize that and I understand that. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. But if you had to push play to five songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, what would those five songs be and by whom?
All right, just randomly. Or yes. Okay. I love the new, is it Moon Along, Made For You?
Okay, yes.
I feel that right now. Amazing song. So I pushed that. I'm listening to Martina McBride at the moment. One of her songs, Concrete Angel. Oh, God, I wish I wrote that song. Beautiful song. That's two. What else would I put? I'll be going to the gym later. So a bit of Backstreet Boys to get me going through the through the treadmill. As Long As You Love Me, something like that would be good. Yeah. Max Martin classic. There's two more. That's a play. I'd probably play one of my own songs. plug. Don't Want to Die by Ironic. Yeah. And then the last one, probably I'd have some by Mariah Carey, probably. A classic, My All.
So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. So as a final message, what would you like to say?
Thank you so much for listening and supporting. And there really isn't anything quite like the healing power of music to get you by.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.